This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Yeah, we had Brian on a little earlier in the 3 o'clock hour. You can always use the Odyssey Rewind app to check out that conversation. We are 2 weeks away from his show at the Factory. Some tickets still available. Some VIP experiences still available at briankilmeade.com. So there were some rumors that were going around that the Department of Education was going to be killed today by an executive order. That did not happen. But here's Linda McMahon, who is the new education. She's the educator. They don't call her the czar. What the hell do they call her? Whatever they call her, here she is.
But since then, we had COVID, and Americans' eyes were open to just what an abject failure this federal agency has been at its mission. Shy of Congress actually dismantling and shutting down the department, one of the most important ways to get power back to a more local level is to simply take the funds appropriated by Congress and block grant them back to the states.
Secretary of Education. That's what everyone was yelling at the radio. Mark, you idiot! It's Secretary of Education. Yes, I, for whatever reason, was having trouble landing on that. Gene Evans is with us, political consultant for Go Consulting, former executive director of the Missouri GOP, former state rep, and the head of the Missouri Federation for Children. She's going to be with us tomorrow on the Reardon Roundtable at our Fish Fry. Hi, Gene. How are you?
I'm great. And I am so excited that Linda McMahon is the new Secretary of Education, because I think she has got the right ideas about moving the money back into the hands of families and states when it comes to educating children.
Do you think that this is logistically realistic? It looks like something that might be tried. I've been around, you know, scenarios where people have mentioned this for a long time. And then, of course, when you say you want to get rid of the Department of Education, people who don't really understand the complexity of the issue would say, whoa, that sounds terrible. Why would you want to hurt education, right? But there's a good reason, because the resources are being wasted.
Right, right. So this department came about when we were still in school, Mark, and I would argue that no child education has improved. The outcomes have not gotten better. Billions of dollars have gone into this bureaucracy, and what President Trump and Linda McMahon are saying, let's put that money back closer to the source. Let's put it back to parents. There's actually something called the Educational Choice for Children Act that's moving through Congress now, which is a universal school choice program that any American can take advantage of, and then block granting money back to the states. And if you talk to superintendents, they'll tell you the federal money has so many strings attached that it's almost not worth it. There's not that much of a benefit to what they do. It's a lot of bureaucracy with really no good results. Now, I think it was created with good intentions, but it hasn't worked. And some of the programs that come out of there, people say, well, what's going to happen to this? Like the IDEA Act and some of the other things that have to do with kids with special needs. Those will just be moved back to where they were before this department was created. And so they're really, it's not going to impact parents in a negative way with some of those programs, but it will impact in a positive way for parents who would like to see better outcomes for their kids.
So to your point, Gene, it was October of 1979 when it was right around the time I was moving here to St. Louis. We moved here in November of 1979 from Chicago. But that's when the Department of Education was established. And the rumors started circulating because this is an executive order that's been in the works for a while here. The Wall Street Journal and others did some reporting on this last night. And apparently the draft says the experiment of controlling American education through federal programs and dollars and the unaccountable bureaucrats those programs and dollars support has failed our children, our teachers, and our families. The draft viewed by the journal was labeled as pre-decisional, suggesting it could change. So I don't know if you know what happened today, or if they're just kind of putting some finishing touches. Obviously, the core challenges will be there right away. But are you hopeful that something like this actually could happen? It's like, if we're talking in a year, is the Department of Education being dismantled?
Well, regardless of where it's, whether it still exists or not, it's going to be downsized if it still exists. And they're moving in the right direction. I've read that it takes an actually get rid of the department.
Yeah, they would have to have a filibuster-proof 60-vote majority there. And I don't know how to get that right.
But that doesn't mean that they can't downsize and, you know, make these programs more accessible to families and get rid of some of the bloat. You may remember, like, these talking heads at the Department of Education were the ones who were, you know, shutting down the schools and saying kids playing football had to wear masks and all kinds of other crazy stuff. So they have not done any. And look at all the COVID money they spent.
Oh my gosh.
We have seen no results from that. And if you put that back, you know, just think about the city of St. Louis, Mark. I mean, I've lived here my whole life. City schools have not gotten better. If anything, they've gotten worse. Wouldn't it be great if these parents had an opportunity to get a scholarship to go to a school that they better fit their kid, whether it was a private school or a different district, because you could use that money for any of those things. And we're seeing this growth of homeschooling, and it's because people are fed up with the schools. They think they can do a better job than the schools can. So their tax dollars that are going to pay for schools are not actually, their kids aren't getting educated there. You know, they're doing it at home.
This is one of those situations. Look, I love the way that the Wall Street Journal, who report on this, they closed the article this way. With around 4,500 employees as of last year, the department is the smallest cabinet level agency, which is interesting. And then they say, polls show most Americans are skeptical of eliminating the department, and Democrats have rallied in opposition to the idea. Well, of course they're skeptical, because when you hear, it's just sort of like what's happening with DEI. If you're a simple person and you don't have an understanding of the evil that DEI really is, then you're going to say, oh, that sounds bad because we're just trying to make things more inclusive and diverse, etc. Same thing with this. People don't really think through it. They hear, oh, Trump wants to kill and Republicans want to kill the Department of Education. That's going to harm our kids, when the opposite is true. So really, this is about educating the voters as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it sounds terrible. And most people aren't paying that close of attention to this. But people weren't paying that much attention to education, actually, until COVID. And then they started to wake up and see what was happening. And, you know, it's been especially impactful in poorer areas. They've fallen behind. Those schools and those school districts, those students are falling even farther behind than they were. That's just a catastrophe. If you've got kids, we've seen in the news recently where kids are graduating from high school that can't read.
Yes. Gene, let me stop you there, because I have highlighted a couple of stories. I even saw another one last week that was being reported on a TV station, maybe it was Boston or something like that, where there's lawsuits because these kids have gotten to the point where they graduate and they literally can't read, which is stunning.
It is stunning, and it's ridiculous, and something has to be done. So I think they're moving in the right direction. Whether it means the department is gone or it's just completely revamped to something that works better for families and more kids learn to read and write and do math, I just think they're moving in the right direction. And if they could pass this national school choice, for just think what that would mean for so many families who they're sending their kids to school and they're not learning to read, they're not learning how to do math, they're being indoctrinated with values that don't match the families. This would be a game changer for so many families and a way out of poverty for poor families if they had a chance to go to a school where their kids could actually learn.
So listen to the details. And I know that you know some of these stories, but I just saw this one the other day, and it's from Hartford, Connecticut. So there's a student there that's suing the Hartford Board of Education. And there's other cases like this and the city of Hartford for negligence. This woman is Alicia Ortiz. She's 19 years old. She graduated from school with honors, high school. She earned a scholarship, but she cannot read or write. She's actually going to UConn in Hartford, and she's a freshman. And she says that what happened was is She was going along, and she did the same thing happened. Sue, remember I talked about this other story. She was having AI do some essays and the speeches and stuff like that. She says that she graduated last year, but she's illiterate and still does not know how to read or write. How can you be a freshman at a major university and not know how to read or write? And this is apparently not isolated.
No, well, if you talk to universities, they will tell you that the students coming in are so poorly educated and they're having to take all these remedial classes, which guess what? Adds up to the amount of money you got to pay, adds up to your student more student loans. It's just a really an endless cycle of kids just trying to get back to, you know, where they're level, and it's costing them money and time, and they can't read or write. You cannot function in the society if you cannot read. You can't. I mean, how do you even get a driver's license, right? Like, it's ridiculous. But I do think, I mean, it's going to take a while, Mark. This is not, there's no easy fix. They don't dismantle the department and all of a sudden everybody knows how to read. But, you know, we're moving in the right direction and they're moving so quickly, but we have to. There are so many kids and families who are just waiting for an opportunity to get out of the cycle of poverty that they're in. And it starts with an education.
Well, I'm totally supportive. I hope they're, because look, I've said this for the last couple of years. These stories that come out, maybe I'm more sensitive to it, Gene, because I have a little girl who's going to turn 10 tomorrow. She turns 10 years old, I'm sorry, on Saturday. She'll be at our fish fry. But because of that, you know, I do pay attention to what's happening in school. And every time I see these stories about how these kids are behind, and by the way, the kids are behind in the good school districts, right?
Right.
They're further behind in St. Louis Public Schools or Los Angeles Unified Schools. So it's even worse in those situations. And there doesn't seem to be anyone that's moving that in the right direction. In fact, let's use our own school district here in St. Louis, where the superintendent saw it fit to take $17 million in a surplus and turn it into $33 million deficit by traveling all over the country and hiring people for DEI causes. That's how the students in St. Louis were treated.
Well, think about this. If, you know, Governor Kehoe, who got his first big initiative on crime through the Senate last night, his second thing he's been talking about is education and school choice. Think of what a difference that would make for the city of St. Louis. If you could feel safe living there and you had an opportunity to send your kid to any school, people might actually want to live in St. Louis. We might actually see, you know, a more thriving opportunity in St. Louis if the governor continues to have these wins and we, you know, solve the crime problem and let people go to school at a school that serves them or introduce some competition, because without any competition, the public St. Louis public schools are just not going to get better.
Oh, you're right about that. Hey, we'll see you on the roundtable tomorrow at the fish fry, but this will be one of the questions that comes up. How would you say everything's going with the session right now? You mentioned the crime bill. That looks very good. It looks like local control is coming back to St. Louis and the police department.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight. Yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's going really well. I mean, they're almost passing too many bills. People are like, wow, there's been like a pent up demand, but people are seeming to get along better. And so there's more, you know, unity, so to speak. And so they're moving forward with the agenda. The other thing, again, when, you know, you have a governor who's walking the halls and talking to people you're saying, it really does help, Mark. I mean, Kehoe was all over the building this week talking to people. And, you know, when the governor comes in and sits down with you and explains why he would like you to support his bill, it's hard to say no, especially to him.
Well, look, I had Andrew Bailey on earlier, and, you know, I had a chance to sit down with him in his office a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, with no disrespect to Governor Parson, Governor Parson was the guy that appointed him. He even admitted that this new governor is so engaged on these issues. In fact, the meeting that I had with Andrew, and I met with Mike that morning, he was heading over across the street to the Capitol to talk to Governor Kehoe about a variety of these issues. So that's important, because there's a lot of teamwork going on right now.
Oh, absolutely. And Andrew Bailey is another one. I mean, that guy's a superstar. You know, like, he is really, he really wants to do the job. It's not just, hey, look at me, I'm Attorney General. He's a guy who's in the weeds doing the hard work. And all these guys are also really well liked and respected by the legislature, and that's important. If you don't like the governor, you're not as likely to go along with some of his ideas. But they're both well liked. We got a great team down there. I'm super excited. It's the best year I've had down there. This is my ninth year. It's the best year so far that I've ever experienced in Jeff City.
Well, let's not get along too well, though. I mean, because that does not serve a talk show host very well. We need some, you know, fights about some things as well.
Well, we'll have some tomorrow. Well, I'm saving some juicy stuff for tomorrow.
Good. Well, we'll see you on the roundtable. Thank you, Gene.
It sounds great. Thank you.
All right, take care. That's Gene Evans. She will be on the panel tomorrow along with State Rep Steve Butts and Jane Duker. We are going to be at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church tomorrow afternoon starting at 3 o'clock doing the show. Come on out and have some great food. Sue is checking out the menu, and it looks delicious. Yeah, it is interesting to have, you know, and I'll be very curious to see how some of the stuff is managed with our local media moving forward. Because even on the issue of the Department of Education, I wonder if there's going to be an effort on the part of the legacy media to actually take any time in these stories to say, hey, maybe there's something to this. Maybe we should have a discussion about where this money goes to, how the money's spent. But to dismiss it completely out of hand, I think is not
short-sighted.
Especially right now, it is short-sighted, because why not take a stab at changing some of these things? And again, in order to dismantle the whole thing, you'd have to have Congress involved, and it doesn't look like that would happen, but maybe you can get a couple of people over. I'm still a little surprised. You know, Joe Manchin did an interview today, and he left the Senate, but he's the guy kind of calling out his party. He was one of the only guys that was doing that when he was in the Senate.
It was so sad. I kept thinking, I was watching the delivery. I had sat there before in that same situation when the president first came, Trump. President Trump came, and he was speaking about energy and things about coal and things I know about energy security we need for our country. And I was standing up, and I think people were hissing me behind, and I was the only one standing. I kept thinking, that's awful. They shouldn't be that disrespectful to the president. They were hissing me, not him.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Joe Manchin was always a guy who was along the lines of John Fetterman. He was sane. He, you know, there were rumors that he was going to flip to being a Republican, but he sent a message to his party now.
They have to understand, the people have spoken. They elect Donald Trump as president. Every red-blooded American should want your president to succeed. If you're in a position of being a House member or a Senate member and you can do something positive, do it. Don't worry about the politics. It'll take care of itself. Make sure our country succeeds and your leader has to succeed. And when you're going to be against something, do it respectfully. Do it with decorum. Not able to stand up and be able to clap on something with a human touch that had, that young man. A young boy, yeah. What he wants to do. That's just unconscionable.
Yeah, he's talking about DJ Daniel, who very well might be featured in our audio cut of the day. But look, Manchin is giving him tough medicine. They're just not listening to it. I mean, they're too crazy on their side. They put this video out today about fighting with AOC, and I swear to God, one of them looks like Wesley Bell, but it's a woman. But he's saying, you got to admit some mistakes.
And you can't make wrong right. You can try all you want to. Just say you made a mistake on the border. I was preaching from day one. Are you all crazy? Have you opened up basically with asylum at the border? What's your reasoning for doing this? So we made a mistake. I don't know why they made their determination to do that, the previous administration. And they should be able to live up to that. And so we made it. We'll fix it. President Trump is who he is. He came in and told you what he was going to do.
That's right. Interesting. Some tough medicine for the Democrats from a Democrat that they don't really consider crazy enough anymore, so they won't listen to him. Audio cut of the day, coming up next.
Get more at 971talk.com.